From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, January 9th, 2018. And on this day, supporters and opponents of recreational marijuana in Maine say they have come up with a framework for regulation. We'll have details. And the Bangor City Council votes to launch an ethics investigation of one of its own members. Those stories in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
After responding to a 911 call in which a man threatened to shoot himself, state police found 60-year-old Thomas Massey and 59-year-old Michelle Massey dead inside their home in Temple this afternoon. State police spokesman Steve McCausland says crisis negotiators trained in mental health were dispatched to the home but were not able to make contact with the couple.
After any tactical team call, the team sits down with negotiators and go through a scenario and a critique of the response that they did to any particular event, and that will take place in this case as well.
McCausland says police will also work to determine the circumstances under which the couple died. Maine regulators are putting a hold on an innovative offshore wind project's proposed contract to sell electricity to Central Maine Power. Fred Bever reports on the latest twist in Aquaventis's attempt to test a floating turbine platform near Monhegan Island.
In 2014, the State Public Utilities Commission gave the green light for the University of Maine's Aquaventis project to negotiate a long-term contract with Central Maine Power for electricity from two experimental floating turbines. Prices would rise to 35 cents a kilowatt hour by the year 2040, but as commissioners note now, electricity prices have recently come under significant downward pressure, and the contract could be worth as much as five times the market price. And that, regulators say, would amount to an unwarranted subsidy.
The intent of the statute is to develop a technology that is going to be commercially viable without subsidy.
Commission Chairman Mark Vinoy also argues that many of the goals of the state's Ocean Wind Energy Act, including reduced dependence on fossil fuel energy, are being met.
In fact, the state of Maine's renewable electricity production exceeds that required by the renewable portfolio standards.
And according to the U.S. Energy Information Office, Vinoy says nearly two-thirds of Maine's net electricity generation comes from renewable energy resources. That includes hydro, biomass, and wind. And Maine's terrestrial wind turbines, says Vinoy,
generate three-fifths of all utility-scale wind power in the six New England states.
The commission decided unanimously against giving final approval to the contract, instead opening a new inquiry in how best to handle it.
We don't see it as a setback. We see it as an exercise of prudence on the part of the commission.
Tony Buxton, the project's legal counsel, says the project remains viable. He notes that while it will need some sort of consumer subsidy, the statute would limit the cost to average residential electricity consumers to about 7.5 cents a month or less. The rest of the cost would be picked up by investors, including the U.S. Department of Energy. And he says the benefits of pioneering floating turbine technology for the state's economy could be huge. Massachusetts, he notes, is ready to award contracts for offshore wind energy worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
They're going to need some floating technology, and there's absolutely no reason why that can't be built in Maine. This is a patented technology and a very valuable technology, and what we seek here is a power contract that helps defray part of the cost of the project.
Buxton says Aquaventis will work with the commission and CMP to come up with a new plan that works for all parties. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
A coalition of supporters and opponents of recreational marijuana says it has come up with a framework to regulate the drug in Maine. The announcement marks a possible path forward as legislators restart the process to create rules that affect how marijuana is tested, taxed, and sold. But it also comes at a time when regulators are facing the possibility of a federal crackdown. Steve Missler has more.
Dozens of people crowded the hearing room Tuesday as the legislature's Marijuana Implementation Committee began work on a bill that could set up the regulatory structure for recreational cannabis. But at the beginning of the hearing, Republican Senator Roger Cates made it clear that another cloud looms over the process, already complicated by competing financial and political interests.
If you think of this as a football game, we just want to know what the rules are. Is football even legal anymore?
Taking Cates' football analogy further, lawmakers want to know if the federal government is preparing for an enforcement blitz in the 8 states that contradict the federal law that says recreational marijuana is illegal. In 2016, Maine voters legalized the sale and growing of recreational marijuana by a narrow margin. But the voter-approved law has run into trouble ever since. Lawmakers took months to draft regulations for legal pot, but the resulting bill was vetoed by Republican Governor Paula Page. The new second effort was complicated last week when U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced that he was rescinding an Obama-era policy that kept the feds from cracking down on the pot trade in the states where the drug is legal.
From our vantage, it just adds more confusion to something that was already really confusing.
Mike Saxel is a lobbyist representing Narrow Gauge Holdings, a medical marijuana outfit trying to get into the recreational market. Saxel's client is among a coalition of groups that announced Tuesday that they had agreed to a general framework to regulate legal marijuana, including strict advertising standards, an opt-in requirement for cities and towns, and a sales tax rate of 17.5%. The coalition includes opponents to legal marijuana, like the Christian Civic League and Mainers Protecting Youth and Communities, as well as Legalize Maine, the same group that helped get the 2016 referendum on the ballot. Saxel says the groups have divergent interests, but
if we are going to have adult-use cannabis, we should have a serious regulatory infrastructure to protect our families and our communities and also to maximize revenue in the state of Maine.
Paul McCarrier of Legalize Maine agrees, even though the agreement means his group will potentially have to surrender the prospect of marijuana social clubs.
This has been a very hard-fought compromise, and this is, we believe, the best path forward to protect the interests of all people of Maine, people who voted for this and people who voted against this.
But McCarrier says the Sessions announcement poses a big problem.
I mean, I think that the practical effect of that memo is it puts things on hold because I don't know that there would be this administration or any administration would move forward with implementing a licensing structure with the threat of federal prosecution and federal asset seizure, as the governor has mentioned in his veto letter and has mentioned publicly.
It's unclear if the feds are poised for a crackdown on legal pot, especially as opinion polls show a growing acceptance for legalization. The Sessions memo largely leaves enforcement decisions up to the 93 U.S. attorneys charged with carrying out the Department of Justice policy. Senator Roger Cates of the Legalization Committee says U.S. attorneys have some independence from the DOJ, but that could mean some states will see a crackdown, while others will be left alone.
A reality which could, in theory, set up 93 different ways that we deal with these issues in our country.
And there are recent examples that illustrate Cates' point. Massachusetts legalized recreational marijuana the same year as Maine. On Monday, the U.S. attorney in the Bay State refused to rule out a crackdown on the voter-approved pot industry. And in Maine, so far, the future is cloudy. Newly appointed U.S. Attorney Halsey Frank said last week that he's still evaluating how the Sessions decision will impact his office's charging decisions. Cates says he's asked for a meeting with Frank. And a spokesman said Tuesday that Frank is still drafting an announcement, which could come as early as this week. What Frank says could have a big impact on the legislation lawmakers create, or it could deep six it before the process gains any momentum. David Boyer helped lead the campaign to legalize recreational marijuana, and he worries Governor LePage could be further emboldened to continue opposing legal pot.
This DOJ memo gives him plenty of cover to veto the next iteration of legalization that comes to his desk. Hopefully he doesn't, because, you know, this is just about discretion for the U.S. attorneys. But he's concerned about the feds.
Last year, the legislature passed a moratorium on the retail sale of marijuana that expires in February. Cates and other lawmakers are backing an extension until May, but it could take a lot longer than that before recreational marijuana is bought and sold in Maine. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And a quick update to the story following a release by U.S. Attorney Halsey Frank. According to the release, Frank says his office will make charging decisions on a case-by-case basis and depending on resources. It also said the U.S. attorney has prioritized prosecution of trafficking cases involving hard drugs like crack, cocaine, and heroin. Possession cases have not been a priority. And for the first time in 20 years, the Bangor City Council has voted to launch an ethics investigation against one of its own for failing to disclose that his public relations firm was doing business with an agency that received money from the city. Councillor Carrie Weston says he was simply unaware of the arrangement, but that response did not satisfy the majority of his colleagues. AJ Higgins has more.
It was, according to one City Hall watcher, one of the most contentious Bangor City Council meetings in years.
You can gavel me if you want, Chair, but I'm not going to allow opinion to rule the decision. Okay? That is an incorrect statement. It is an absolutely false statement.
Bangor City Council member Kerry Weston was on the defensive as he tried to persuade a majority of the council that his failure to acknowledge his company's financial relationship with a city vendor several months ago owed to a lapse of memory. The council's code of ethics requires members to disclose pertinent facts that they know to be true in their business dealings with the city. Back in June, Weston voted with the council to approve a payment of $60,000 to the Bangor Convention and Visitors Bureau. A month later, the council voted to double that funding amount, but Weston recused himself from the vote because he said his business partner, Elizabeth Sutherland, served as chair of the bureau's board. But Weston said at the time that his firm was not receiving any money from the bureau when, in fact, it was being paid for maintaining the Bureau's website.
It's clear to me that information should have been in my head or on paper before me, before answering a question. When I found out that I erred in that, I brought it forward.
But others allege that Weston's decision to come forward and admit his failure to disclose only happened after Bangor Council Chair Ben Sprague discovered that Sutherland Weston had been receiving money from the Visitors Bureau. As Sprague consulted with other council members, Weston stepped forward to say that he was simply unaware at the time of the business arrangement in question.
You cannot disclose facts that you don't know to be true. You can't present conflicts that you don't know exist.
Fellow council member David Neely, the only other Republican besides Weston on the nine-member council, says the issue should have stopped there.
It clearly is not an ethical violation to fail to disclose something that you had told us you had no knowledge of at the time.
But some counselors, including Sprague, say that in this case, ignorance is not a defense.
I feel that the issue is more a question of whether he should have known it. He should know things like this, especially entities that do business with the city. I think that he should have a full understanding of all potential conflicts of interest.
Weston strongly protested the mayor's assessment.
I will say that I don't appreciate the comments that you made about what I should or should not know about the business that I have. I think that was over the line.
But by the meeting's end, Weston acknowledged that he really doesn't know everything that's going on at his company, adding that that should not really be a surprise.
To think that I know every transaction in my own business and every company that we work with just doesn't happen. I have three kids. I'm lucky to wear pants in the morning.
The issue has now been forwarded to the city's independent ethics board, which will determine whether or not Weston committed an ethical breach of conduct. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Tuesday, January 9th, 2018. Thanks to our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.